This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. Fifth chapter, text 18. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihashtani Shuni Chaiva Shapake Cha Pandita Samadarshanaha. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Purport. Krishna conscious person does not make any distinction between species or castes. The Brahmin and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog or a cow or an elephant may be different from the point of view of species. But these differences of body are meaningless from the viewpoint of a learned transcendentalist. This is due to their relationship to the Supreme. For the Supreme Lord, by his plenary portion as Paramatma, is present in everyone's heart. Such an understanding of the Supreme is real knowledge. As far as the bodies are concerned, in different castes or different species of life, the Lord is equally kind to everyone because he treats every living being as a friend, yet maintains himself as Paramatma, regardless of the circumstances of the living entities. The Lord as Paramatma is present both in the outcast and in the Brahmin, although the body of a Brahmin and that of an outcast are not the same. Bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature, but the soul and the supersoul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. The similarity in the quality of the soul and the supersoul, however, does not make them equal in quantity, for the individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A Krishna conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore he is truly learned and has equal vision. The similar characteristics of the soul and supersoul are that they are both conscious, eternal, and blissful. But the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of the body, whereas the supersoul is conscious of all bodies. The supersoul is present in all bodies without distinction. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadhati Shapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrishatam Shahagana Raghunatam Pitam Stam Sajivam Shadvaitam Shabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanditamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindha Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kolpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Pyevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktarinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We'll start with some of the thoughts from this verse and also take them further. The basic principle of spiritual understanding is to understand that we're not these material bodies. What is that? Yasyatma buddhi kunupe chidhatate. Swadhi kalatradi shubhomi jati. Yatirta buddhi shalale nikarhichit. Janeshu vigyeshu saiva gokara. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it said that there's a kind of atma-buddhi, knowledge of oneself. Kunapetri tatuke. The person whose knowledge is such that he thinks this bag of three elements is myself, is an ass. Gokara, he's no better than a cow or an ass. Three elements means kapha-pitta-vayu. According to Ayurvedic medicine, there are three humors in the body, three elements that are supposed to be kept in balance for good health. Mucus, bile, and air, they're sometimes called. So the body is kunape chudhatika. It's a bag of these three elements. There's the skin holds it together. If you took away the skin, all the elements would splatter all over the place. You'd have a real mess. It's a machine made of all these. It's got a pump, and it's got a hydraulic system and a pneumatic system, and it's got all sorts of an electrical system. It's a machine. Yantra Rudhani Maya. It's a machine. So in material consciousness, one misidentifies the machine with the person. One mistakenly thinks that here's a Brahmin, here's a Shudra, here's a this, here's a that. Seeing only in terms of the body. One thinks, I'm an American, or I'm Indian, I'm white, I'm black, I'm old, I'm young, I'm thin, I'm fat, I'm this, I'm that, in terms of the body. One thinks I belong to a certain country, a certain family, a certain community, not recognizing that this actually has nothing to do with the real self. Real self, the soul within the body, doesn't belong to any family or community or nation, caste, race. It has nothing to do with these things. Asango hi yam bhuja. Aham brahmasmi, I'm the spirit soul within the body, and I misidentify myself with this body. So the Bhagavatam says, anyone who thinks that the body is the self has the mentality of a cow or an ass. Means stupid. Doesn't understand what is what. One has to see, with this vision, pandita samadarshana, that the soul is the same within all the bodies. Just as there may be a different cars, a Mercedes-Benz and a Volkswagen and a Toyota and a this or that, but it's not that the person is different because of what car he's in. It's not that if I get out of a Mercedes and walk into a Volkswagen, I become a different person. Or if I walk the other way, I become a different person. The machine is different, but the person is the same. Or today I'm dressed this way, if tomorrow I'm dressed with a different dress, I remain the same person. It's not that the dress is the person. So the soul and the body are completely different. And the mistake of material consciousness is that we identify the body with the self. And we miss the real person within the body. We give more importance to the body and less importance. The body is there, that's all right. Why am I feeding it? Why am I taking care of it? The body is there. But which is more important, the body or the person within the body? The materialist gives more importance to the body. You ask him about his goals in life, and they'll be all about this body. Having a nice house, having a nice wife, having a nice family, having a good money, this, that. Or liberating his country, or uplifting some section of people. It will be about this body. And for the soul, he gives hardly any importance. Simply concerned with the temporary values pertaining to the body, the temporary comfort of this body, the temporary happiness relating to the body. And he gives hardly any importance to the person within the body. This is something like shining the cage while the bird starves. There's a bird in the cage, and instead of feeding the bird, I'm shining the cage. Cage also has value. We want a nice clean cage, but if you starve the bird, the cage is useless. Or I'm driving in the car and I'm putting petrol in the car, but I'm not eating. The person within the car is more important. Just like if there's some accident, first they try to see if there's some survivors from the accident and get the person out. They don't first see if they can take care of the car and then afterwards wonder whether there was anyone in it. The person is important and the car is secondary. So we're at the present moment a combination of body and soul. The body is the container and the soul is contained within the body. But of the two, the soul is important. If I neglect my identity as soul, or if I see others and neglect their identity as soul, I'm missing the point. So that's the first thing. It extends not only to human society. We make groups. Yes, my countrymen are good, and those people in that other country are bad. Or my community is good, their community is bad. My family matters, their family can go to hell. Or someone's a great philanthropist, so human society should be uplifted, and the animals I can eat. So this discrimination is going on in so many different ways in terms of the body. But the learned person sees that the same soul is there, not the same, very same soul, but that the soul is of the same quality. I'm one soul, you're another soul, but there's no difference. Not that I'm a different kind of soul. Soul is of one kind. The bodies are of many kinds, but the soul is of one nature. The same nature as Krishna. Krishna's Satchidananda Vigraha, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge. And we're also full of bliss, full of knowledge, also eternal, because we're parts of Krishna. Mami Vangsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The part has the same characteristics as the whole. The water, the drop of water is wet, the ocean is also wet. The ocean has salt, the drop has salt. So the same qualities are there in the whole and in the part. And we have the same qualities as Krishna, all of us, regardless of which body we're in. But quantitatively, we're different from Krishna. I can't say Krishna is eternal, I'm eternal, therefore I'm also Krishna. Krishna, nityo nityanam, among all the innumerable eternals, he's the supreme eternal. Just like we may all be South Africans, but that doesn't mean make you the president. Zuma, that's his. So there's one man who's the president, Mr. Zumo, because he has more power. When he says the army goes, then the army goes. If an ordinary citizen says the army should march, the army goes nowhere. Because even though he's South African and you're also South African, and therefore you're equally South African, he's the supreme South African. And everyone else is a subordinate South African. So Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. We're also persons, but we're tiny persons. Therefore, anyone who's claiming, I'm also God, is a fool. like the drop of water saying, I'm also the ocean. In quality, the drop is also the same as the ocean, but the quantity is entirely different. But we're one with God in quality, but God is infinite, and we're infinitesimal. So the infinitesimal parts of Krishna are all of the same quality. Spiritually, we're all the same, only the bodies are different. This is the first point of spiritual understanding. And it's revolutionary, actually, because the world is trying to establish equality in terms of the body, but the bodies are not the same. The child's body and the man's body are not the same. I'm not the same as a heavyweight wrestler. The bodies are all different. So people may have different occupations. People may have different, the man's body and the woman's body are different. Men aren't going to make good mothers. Women aren't going to make good fathers. Bodily differences may be there. Just as cars may be different. The car's bodies. You get yellow ones and blue ones and so on. And artificially we try to establish that equality in terms of the body, and it's not true. It's not that every body is equal. In every community, there's people who are strong, there are people who are weak, there are people who are brilliant, there are people who are foolish. Not that everybody is somehow or other the same. It's just not true. But spiritually, that's where the equality is. There's no difference between any living being and any other living being spiritually. That's the first point. Then going beyond this, in the Shastra it said, Vaishnave Jati Buddhi. What is that? Vishnu Shila, Vishnu Murti Shila Di, Gurushu Naramati, Vaishnave Jati Buddhi, Narakisa. If someone thinks, there's Vaishnav means the devotee of the Lord. So if someone thinks of a Vaishnav, Vaishnavs are actually Krishna's men. I say I belong to this family, I belong to that family. But when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, when he surrenders to Krishna, then he's counted as a member of Krishna's family. We inquire in India, what is your gotra? To which family line do you belong? But the Vaishnavas are counted in the Achyuta gotra. They belong to Krishna's family. Therefore, Vaishnave Jati Buddhi. One should not see a Vaishnava as belonging to a particular sect, a particular caste, a particular jati, in terms of his birth. Someone who sees that way, not a kisa, he has a hellish mentality. Once one joins the Achyuta Gotra, Krishna's family, then no distinction is made. We don't consider that here's an American Vaishnav, and here's an Indian Vaishnav, here's a white Vaishnav, and here's a black Vaishnav, here's this Vaishnav, and here's that Vaishnav. Vaishnav is Vaishnav. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself vividly illustrated this principle. He had devotees from all communities, including the Muslim community. They would join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Some of them were Brahmins, some of them were Shudras, some were high class, some were low class. But in the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was no such distinction. Just like Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur happened to be born in a Muslim family. In India, still, the Muslim community is generally drawn from the lower sections of society. Now, it may change, but historically, those who were of the lower sections were largely excluded from the temples. They were excluded from, they were discriminated against. So when Islam came to India, then the opportunity was offered that you join Islam, and then you're out of that system. As long as you're in the Hindu society, then you're considered low class. But you join Islam, and now you're not in the Hindu society. Plus, we'll give you all sorts of incentives because now we're ruling the country. So, you join us and you'll be in a better situation. So many people, especially the lower sections of society, joined the, became Muslims. So they were considered of the lower section. Plus, the Muslims are accustomed to eating meat, and that immediately categorizes them as lechas. The meat eaters are considered immediately low class. So, Haridas Thakur happened to come from the Muslim community, but he was attracted to the holy name of Krishna, so much so that he used to chant so many hundreds of thousands of times the holy name of Krishna every day. So many times. So that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu regarded him as the Namacharya, the standard setter in the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. Vyacharya, the example, exemplar of chanting the holy name of Krishna. There was another associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Advaitacharya, who was coming from a very high class Brahmin family. So, highest class. And there's a ceremony, a Shraddha ceremony, which is performed for the sake of one's departed family members. And in that ceremony, one of the customs is that food should be offered to a high-class Brahmin. So when it came time for Advaitacharya to perform that ceremony, he offered the plate first to Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur said, "This is not at all suitable. You're a high-class Brahmin, and I'm lecha, and everyone will laugh at you. You're coming from a respectable family, and people will ridicule you." Advaitacharya said, "I don't care. By feeding you, I'm feeding thousands of the best Brahmins. Because you're more than a Brahmin. A Brahmin is only one of the designations of the material, according to the material modes of nature. A person in the mode of goodness is counted as a Brahmin. But you're better than the Brahmin. Because you're always chanting the holy name of Krishna, you're on the transcendental platform. And it's not just my sentiment, but I can cite so many verses from Shastra to prove this point. Aho bata svapacho to guriyan tajjivagre vartate namatubhya. There are many, many verses. That person on whose tongue the holy name of Krishna is situated is better than the Brahmin. He's already performed all austerities. He's already bathed in all the holy places. He's already performed all the sacrifices. He's studied all the Vedas because he's chanting the holy name of Krishna. He's beyond the Brahminical status. Kiratu Hunandra Palinda Purkusha Shujanti Tasmai Purvishwam, in many, many places. In the Nectar of Devotion, you'll find it cited that if some sacrifice is going on and someone, you know, they have, when they do a sacrifice, there's a sacred area that's set apart for performing the ceremony, and it's sanctified with mantras and paraphernalia, and the Brahmins sit there, and, you know, the priests. So it's like a very holy place, and they light a sacrificial fire there. And if a person who's a dog eater comes into that area, then it's considered that the thing is polluted. You know, then that place now that they went through so much trouble to sanctify, that becomes polluted. Because a dog, you know, imagine a person who's eating dogs, how low is that? Anyone who's eating meat, that's already considered to be very, very degraded. But he's eating dog meat. How low is that? So such a person, and you can imagine the habits of such a person. He's not the best of gentlemen. So if such a person enters the arena of performing the sacrifice, then the place is polluted. They have to wash it all down with cow dung and water and start all over again. It pollutes the whole place just by his presence. But if a dog eater becomes a Vaishnav, he's eligible to perform the sacrifice. The same man. But once he becomes a Vaishnav, he becomes so pure that he can perform the ceremony. This statement is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. How? Prabhavishnave Nama. Because Vishnu is pure, Krishna is pure. Pravitram Paramam Bhavan. So one who surrenders to Krishna also becomes pure. Nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmad brahmanisteistata. He becomes the purest of the pure. Therefore, Vaishnava Jati, no one should think in terms of material calculation that here's this kind of Vaishnav, here's that kind of Vaishnav, and these are high class Vaishnav and low class Vaishnav. Vaishnavas, they're called Harijan. This word has been misused in recent Indian history as a designation for any, the low class people are somehow designated as Harijan, God's men. But why should they be designated as gods? Simply because they're low in their social standing and because their habits are generally low? How does that make them God's own men? Poverty is not the qualification. Simply to be rich, otherwise, the man who's very rich, he's giving big donations, he's God's man. Or the man who has no money, he's God's man. No. God's man is the person who surrenders to God's direction. Sarva dharman pratyaja mam ekam sharanam. Krishna says, give up everything and surrender to me. Then one becomes God's man. Just like a government man. It's not just that by being low class, you're now a government man. Or by being high class, you're a government man. You have to qualify yourself, completely dedicate yourself to government service. Then you become a government man. Not just by being high class, low class. So many bogus things have been put. Daridra Narayan, another invented term. That simply by being, Daridra means poor. So out of sympathy for the poor, they give this name, Daridra Narayan. He's God in the form of a poor man. But it's not, is it that simply by being poor one becomes Narayan, one becomes God? And it's an insult to God. Poor God. God is Lakshmi Pati, he's the husband of the goddess of fortune. How has he become Daridra? And do we now have two kinds of gods, the Daridra Narayan and Dhani Narayan, the poor God and the rich God? Well, these things are all invented by people who act on sentiment, social sentiment, but don't understand the message of Bhagavad Gita. So in this way we have to understand that Krishna says to everyone, you can all become my man. But it's not that when you become my man, you become me. In some places, the impersonalist, members of the impersonalist school, they offer, among the sannyasis, they offer respect to one another. Namo Narayan. As if by taking sannyas, by accepting the renounced order, one had become Narayan, God. And the so-called sannyasi thinks, yes, that I've become one with God by accepting this order. This is all another bogus thing. Simply by changing my dress and giving up the world, I've become God. No? But one becomes a servant of God. One becomes servant of God. God is always the master, and the living being is always the servant, even in the stage of liberation. It's not that now I'm a small living being, and when I'm liberated, I become the supreme living being. If I'm the supreme living being, how have I forgotten that I'm the supreme living being? Why am I being kicked around by material nature if I'm God? But they have this another invented idea that I'm God, I've only forgotten that I'm God. What kind of God is that who can't remember who he is? So one who surrenders to God becomes God's man because he follows God's orders. Krishna says surrender, he surrenders. Krishna says manmana, think of me. Bhavamadbhakta, become my devotee. Madhyaji, worship me. Mam namaskuru, offer your respects to me. And the fortunate person agrees, yes sir, I accept you as the supreme personality of Godhead. I'll think of you, I'll become your devotee, I'll surrender to you. And then Krishna accepts him. Krishna accepts him as being as good as himself. So in this way we have to see, everyone is a spiritual living being, everyone is the same. But those who've surrendered their lives to God, to Krishna, are very dear to Krishna. They're very dear to Krishna. And one should never make the mistake of seeing in terms of the body, Vaishnava Jati Buddhi. One should see these are all Krishna's devotees, and we make no material distinction. And one should serve the devotees. In the Shastra it said, Lord Shiva says, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Puram. Among all kinds of worship, worship of Lord Vishnu is the best. Because all of the other deities, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Durga, Ganesha, They're all servants of Vishnu. Vishnu is the supreme. All others are his subordinate servants. So Lord Shiva himself says, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu, Aradhanam Param. Among all kinds of worship, worship of Lord Vishnu is the best. Tasmat Parataram Devi, Tadiyanam Samarchanam. My dear wife, Devi, better than worship of Lord Vishnu is worship of Lord Vishnu's devotee. The Lord considers worship of his devotee or service to his devotee to be better than service to himself. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that there's a saying, love me, love my dog. A man is walking a dog, and if you pet the dog, you have a very nice dog. The man becomes very happy. Yes, he's a very good dog. Or the man has a son. He may be a very big man, millionaire, multimillionaire. You might not get to meet him. You know, you can't bribe your way in, anything. But if you're kind to his son, if you give him maybe a 2-cent little candy, the man becomes pleased. Oh, he's such a nice man. If the son is pleased, then the father becomes more happy. So better than service to God is service to God's devotee. Krishna counts that as more. So we should see the devotees in this way. That this is our opportunity. We can serve the devotees, and this way Krishna will be pleased. And our business is to please Krishna. All right, maybe we'll stop there and see what kind of questions or thoughts you might have. Yes.
There is this saying that we are being created in the image of God. I don't know the word image is viewed as being identical or is viewed as being just a photocopy of God. From what you've been saying is that even if you have been created in the image of God, we are not God.
Yes.
We'll only be God once we surrender.
No. Not that when you surrender...
So we'll never be God.
You'll never be God. Natasya karyam karnam cha vidyate. It's said in the Upanishads that God has nothing to do. Natasya karyam karnam cha vidyate. So anyone who has to do something to become God can't be God. Krishna never did any meditation or tapasya or anything to become sacrifice, to become God. He was always God. When he was on the lap of his mother, he killed the Putana Rakshasi, Putana Witch. When he was 8 years old, he lifted the Govardhan Hill. He didn't do any study or yoga or anything. He was constitutionally God from the very beginning. That's the definition of God, but he's always God.
Now, if we are also eternal, if we are also our soul being perceived as being eternal.
We're also eternal. Just like a spark. The fire has light, and the spark has light. But the spark is not the fire. As long as the spark is in the fire, then the spark is brilliant. If the spark falls out of the fire, it loses its brilliance. So we're like the spark out of the fire. Now we've lost our brilliance. So we can again enter the fire, enter into the association of Krishna, and then we regain our brilliance. But we never become the whole fire. Right? Or like the hand of a clock. If the hand somehow falls out of the clock, then it's a useless piece of metal. It needs to be in its place in the clock, then it's very valuable. But it doesn't become the whole clock. It's only still just the hand.
So when we die, when the body dies, our souls, are they going to reside within the precinct of God, or are we just going to hover in the middle of nowhere?
No, there's no middle of nowhere. The soul, after leaving this body, goes to the next body. After leaving this body, according to our consciousness, we take another body. There are 8,400,000 species of life. One can be born anywhere in any one of them. Until one becomes Krishna conscious, then chatvadeham punarjanmanayati manayati. And he doesn't have to take birth again, he goes to Krishna. But that doesn't mean he becomes Krishna. To go to Krishna and to become Krishna are two different things. Just like a bird, a green bird, a parrot, flies into a green tree. So he doesn't become the tree. Even though he's green and the tree is green, it doesn't mean now he's one with the tree, and therefore he's the whole tree. The tree is still the tree, and the bird is still the bird. So in liberation also, we remain part. But now I'm the bewildered part, and when I'm liberated, then I'm the part who's rightly situated. But I'm just like a healthy hand. Now it's a healthy hand because it's serving the whole body. If it becomes diseased, then it doesn't serve. And we say it's a diseased hand. And again, if it becomes healthy, then it's, again, properly serving the body. But it doesn't, now it's healthy, now it's the whole body. Now the finger has become the whole body. No. But now the finger is serving the body. The hand is serving the body. That's its healthy position. It's either healthy or unhealthy. But now we're in our unhealthy condition. Let me be independent. Let me enjoy. Let me claim this is mine, that is mine. That's our unhealthy condition. A healthy condition is everything belongs to Krishna, I also belong to Krishna, let me serve Krishna. Not let me become Krishna. That's not possible, Krishna is already Krishna.
It's a bit difficult to understand.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
When the soul becomes liberated, as the gentleman said, you said that it doesn't merge with
no.
Krishna. So where does the liberated soul go to?
Mamati, Krishna says he comes to me. Krishna has his abode. Pastasma tu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. Krishna says, I have my eternal abode beyond this material world. And one can go there.
But in our understanding, the abode is Krishna.
The abode
is Krishna.
Is Krishna?
So when
no, that's a misunderstanding. Just like
Krishna.
Just like the president and the president's palace, presidential mansion. So you can say that one who goes to the, you say, I'm going to visit the president. So you go to the mansion, that's visiting the president because the president is there in the mansion. But it's not that the mansion is the president. The mansion is his abode, his place where he lives. Not that the mansion is the president. It's a fact. You go into the mansion and you meet the president, but it's not that the president and the mansion are the same. Krishna is a person. Purushottam. Purusha Uttam. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's said he's the supreme person. Person implies he has his abode, he has his form, he has his qualities, he has his name, he has his activities. You're a person, you have your place where you live, you have your activities, you have your name, you have your friends. Well, why should God be less? He has no name, no qualities, no friends, no place to live. You're a person and God is a person, but God is the supreme person. It's not that God... We were driving in Johannesburg, and when we left the house, there was a disheveled man with a little sign saying, homeless. You know, I'm homeless, I'm unemployed. So why should God be homeless? He's not poor, he's Lakshmi Pati. Why should he be homeless?
Because, well, from my understanding, he's coming down on his karmic deeds.
Excuse me?
On his karma.
No, that's your misunderstanding. Where did you get that understanding?
Okay, can you explain karma to
us? Yeah, karma is what Krishna doesn't have. Name karma palespriha. Namam karmani limpanti name karma palespriha. Iti mam yo bijanati karma birna sabhajate. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm not affected by karma, and there's no result of karma that I aspire for. Anyone who understands this becomes free from karma. If by understanding Krishna you become free from karma, how can Krishna have any karma? Janma, he has karma, he has activities, but janma karma cha me divyam. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, my janma, Krishna has a janma also, he has birth, but it's not like my birth or your birth. He's born with four arms, with Shankha Chakra Gada Padma, with these symbols of Krishna. No one else here was born that way. Yo, the ordinary human being has karma. We come here because of karma. Karma means my past activities. For my past activities, there's some result, good or bad. If I act piously, I get a good result. If I act sinfully, I get a bad result. And all the mixture of good and bad results gives me my destiny. Excuse me? Your future destiny. Or my present situation is the result of my past activities. But not for Krishna. Krishna is not born in the family of Vasudev because of his karma. In the Bhagavad Gita, Sambhavami Atmamayaya, I come by my own energy. We can't say I chose to be born in such and such family. I came by my own power. We're forced by material energy. But Krishna says, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyute Satrasha. Material energy works under my supervision. Material energy can't force Krishna to go anywhere because he's in charge of that material energy. So when he comes, it's Atma Maya, it's by his own mercy, by his own energy. Between?
Lord Vishnu and Krishna?
No, Vishnu and Krishna same. Just different manifestations of the same personality of Godhead. Vishnu or Krishna.
So, who came down as
Krishna? Krishna and Vishnu are the same person. Krishna came when he appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, before Devaki Vasudev. He appeared as Krishna, and then just to impress upon his mother and father that actually you've prayed for me to come, so then he showed his form as Vishnu. Then again, he resumed his form as Krishna. So he's the same person, but he can show himself as Vishnu. But he's always transcendental, and he's always a person. So when Arjuna became liberated, it's not that he merged into Krishna. At the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Nashtamoha Smritir Labdha, now I'm free from illusion. But he didn't say, now I'm free from illusion, I realize that I'm you, you're me, I'm merged into you. Karishye vachanam tava, now I'll do what you say. In illusion, I'm refusing. No, I'll do what I want. And when I'm free from illusion, I'm your servant, I'll do as you like. First you understand what is Krishna, then we'll talk about the love between Radha and Krishna.
But there's a lot of confusion.
But first confusion is we don't know who Krishna is. And if we don't know who Krishna is, what will we understand about Krishna's dealings? First we have to understand who Krishna is. If we're thinking Krishna is an ordinary human being or Krishna is something else, we'll not understand. So first thing, therefore, Bhagavad Gita is the first book to understand who is Krishna. Then after Bhagavad Gita, then Bhagavatam is there. And in 10th canto, then these subject matters. But first we have to understand the science. Otherwise we'll misunderstand. It's like a person, if he wants to understand gold, he has to understand something about metal. If he thinks, well, gold is metal, that's all. So iron is also metal. Gold is also metal. So there's no difference. Huh? Then he'll not understand. First you have to understand that there's iron, that there's gold, that iron and gold are not the same thing. They may both be metal. Just like I'm thinking that God is eternal, I'm eternal, therefore I'm God. No. Iron is metal, gold is metal, therefore iron is gold. Or the mine is gold and my earring is gold, therefore my earring is a gold mine. They both may be gold, but the gold earring is a tiny piece of gold. And the gold mine is huge. It's not that you became a millionaire because you have a little gold earring. The quantity is different. Because one has to understand these things. What is metal? What is iron? What is gold? What's a little gold ornament? And what's a gold mine? So in this way we have to understand the basic principles of the science of Krishna, then we'll be eligible to understand these more advanced subject matters. We're publishing all of these things in our books. So take advantage. You have any of our books, this Bhagavad Gita, as it is? This you have? This one, Bhagavad Gita, as it is? So if you study this Bhagavad Gita as it is, gradually you'll become expert in the science of Krishna. You'll understand things as they are. There are so many sentimental ideas, so many things, which are said without reference to Shastra. Therefore they have no authority. They're just my idea, your idea, the next man's idea. That's not the way to understand. We have to understand from Krishna. Krishna is explaining himself in the Bhagavad Gita. We have to understand Bhagavad Gita as it is. Then we'll get the right understanding. Is that okay? Good. Yes?
You mentioned something about energy. Matter into, as a form of energy.
I'm sorry, could you speak up?
I say you mentioned something about matter and energy.
Yes.
And I've learned in some books that the soul, or every particle, every piece of matter, is energy at a different level of vibration. And the soul is the finest form of energy. And taking it from that level, you find that if I perceive this stone as a form of energy, which means it can, if you can apply more energy on it, it can also reach a level where it is the finest form of energy.
No, it's not like that. Yes?
Didn't understand the question.
He's heard that there's, that matter and energy are essentially the same thing, that matter consists of energy at different levels of vibration, different levels of fineness, and that the soul represents energy at its finest level. So then it should be that, for example, we take this stone, which is one form of energy, and if we refine it or apply, increase its energy level or refine its energy level, then it comes to the level of being spirit. But Krishna, first thing is that Krishna says, these are my energies. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kammano buddhirevacha. Ahankaratiyam me binna prapatirashtita. There's earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. Krishna says, these are my material energies. Apareya mitastranyam prakriti vidhi me param. Jiva bhutam mahabaho. Then higher is my spiritual energy, superior energy. Material energy has no consciousness. The stone has no consciousness. The spiritual energy has consciousness. But we can't apply this or that and change one to the other. But Krishna can do it. Krishna can change matter into spirit, spirit into matter. For Krishna, it's no problem. But we can't do that.
Well,
no, not referring to us. Just like if I say,
so don't we have to go to
this is my chatter. I say this is my chatter. Does that mean it's your chatter? If I say this is my ear, does it make it your ear? If I say this is my wallet, does it make it your wallet?
We don't take Krishna's sayings as literal.
Excuse me?
It's not in the literal sense. When he says,
your voice is soft and the children are loud.
That's in the literal sense. When
why not? Why not in the literal sense?
A human being, the soul that's on earth should now strive to the spiritual level.
No, well, why are you doing that? When Krishna says me, why are you making it something else?
That's what he's telling us to reach.
Well, that's what you're adding to it. If I say, give me a glass of water, and you say that means give a glass of water to everyone. Is that what I said? That's what you're adding to it. My meaning was very clear. Please bring me a glass of water. And if you bring me a glass of water, then you've understood what I said. But if you think that he's really saying give everyone a glass of water, then you haven't understood. Or if I say bring me a glass of water and you bring me milk. That's not what I said. I said water. The Krishna says me. Me is a very simple word, very clear word. It refers to the person who's speaking. If I say bring a glass of water to me, it means me. It doesn't mean you, it doesn't mean everyone. If something's unclear, then maybe it needs to be explained, to be interpreted. But when it's already clear, why should it be changed? Krishna says, me. Manmana, think of me. Bhavamadbhakta, become my devotee. Madhyaji, worship me. Mam namaskuru, offer namaskar to me. Is there something that's not clear there? Me means the person speaking. Krishna says, this is my energy. Now why do I have to say that means it's my energy also? Krishna says, it's my energy. Not that it's everybody's energy. If I say this is my wife, does it mean she's also your wife? Excuse me?
We should work towards getting the energy
from... We should work to get it. That's called stealing. If I say this is my wife, and you think that means... So, and he thinks, well, that means I should work toward making her my wife.
I don't know, my understanding is a little
better. Huh?
My understanding of what I think is a little different.
Yeah, I understand that your understanding is different. And I'm asking you to examine your understanding and see whether it makes sense. If I say this is my wife, it doesn't mean that he should try to make her his wife. She's my wife. If this is my money, and if you think, well, how do I make it my money? That's envy. But he has 1,000 rand, but why him? Why not me also? Or why not me instead? Attachment means that it's Krishna's and we're claiming it to be ours. Krishna says, Sarvaloka Maheshram, I'm the owner of everything. And I'm claiming, no, I own this, I own that. How are we the owner? It was here before we came, it'll be here after we're gone, but I'm claiming it's mine. And I'm attached to it because it's mine.
His divine energy.
That's what?
Krishna refers to his material creation as this divine energy of mind.
Yeah, his divine energy of mind.
Yes, at the same time, devotees of Krishna chant the holy name with the belief that the holy name is synonymous with Krishna.
Yes.
Why is it that more than often devotees are confronted with more trials and tribulations?
Devotees are confronted what?
Devotees, whilst chanting the holy names, the Mahamantra, which is synonymous with Krishna, devotees are still confronted with more trials, material pains, material tribulations. And Krishna refers to this as this divine energy of mind.
Yes.
Krishna says the material energy is his divine energy. So why is it that when we become devotees of Krishna, we're presented with so many trials, so many difficulties? That's your question? Yeah. Because we're still in this material world. It's not that as soon as I enter the hospital, I'm at once cured. You know, if someone goes into the hospital, he says, well, if I'm in the hospital, why am I still sick? I've come to the hospital. This is the place for being cured. Why am I not cured? We have to be patient because we've entered the hospital and we're following the doctor's prescription. We're taking the medicine. So definitely, after some time, we'll be cured. But it's not that we can expect that as soon as we enter the hospital, at once cured. Krishna guarantees, you stick to this process and you'll come to me. But it's not that on day one, just like a woman gets married, and then the next morning she says, well, where's my child? There's just some patience is required because you're married. You carry on and you'll get the child, but it takes some time. There's some karma because I have this body. The body is the result of my karma. But the karma of a devotee is reduced to the minimum. Some token karma is still there. A little token. Maybe I cut my finger, I was meant to lose my hand. And only I cut my little finger. But for a devotee, the karma is reduced. But something has to be there because I still have this body. But you remain Krishna conscious, chant Hare Krishna. Practically you won't even feel the disturbances caused by this karma. You go on chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Then whatever may happen, you'll carry on.
Yes. Still linked to this idea or this debate.
This idea of what?
Debate about material possessions.
Huh.
In Christianity, there are those who believe that if they surrender material possessions, living in the condition, a poor state of condition, material condition, they lend themselves, you know, to being better Christians.
Yeah, in Christianity, there's this idea that if I give up so many possessions, then I'll be a better Christian. That idea is also there in Bhagavatam. Janmaisharya Shuta Shribhir Edamanam Madakpuna. Because I have beauty and wealth and possessions and I'm a big shot, so I think, you know, what do I need God for? I'm a big man. I become puffed up by so many possessions, so many things. I think, this is my money, this is my house, this is my company, this is my this. I become proud. And pride is an obstacle for spiritual progress. Therefore, in the Vedic culture also, there's sannyas. Sannyas means one takes the role of a beggar. That's favorable for spiritual progress. To be a beggar is better than to be a king. So I may not simply give away all my money. But one is advised that one should think that this is Krishna's money. And one should engage. Even it said 50% I should be engaging for the service of Krishna. The other 50% let me live on that. And I'm poor. Maybe. But that's better. Rather than to be trying to accumulate more and more of Krishna's energy and claiming it as mine, the goal should be to surrender more and more, recognizing this is God's energy. So it should be engaged in the service of God. Either I should engage it in God's service, or I should give it to the devotees to be engaged in God's service. Not that my goal in life is more and more to gather more and more of God's energy and claim it to be mine. That's exactly our problem. The whole world is going on in that way. How can I double my holdings, triple my holdings? But whatever he's holding is not his. It's God's property, and he's claiming it as his own. Yo bungte stene, therefore it's said he's a thief. Whole world is a world of thieves. That's why there's karma. We're thieves. A thief has to expect that karma may catch up to him. We're claiming God's property to be our own property. It's not mine. Everything belongs to Krishna. Poktaram yagyatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram. He's the supreme owner, he's the supreme enjoyer, not us. But our disease is that we're thinking, let me enjoy, let me own. No, let me give enjoyment to Krishna. Let me acknowledge that Krishna is the owner of everything. So it's like in the king's palace. When the king's servant is serving the king, he also eats nice food. He also lives in the nice palace. He's also protected by the king's army. But if he thinks, let me be the king, or let me, you know, take some of the gold plates and, you know, put them in my pocket, put them under my cloak. Now he's in trouble. But as long as he's serving the king, he'll eat the same food as the king. He'll be protected. He'll live in the same palace. But as soon as he thinks, let me be the king, then he's finished. Or as soon as he, or you're working in the bank, so you have a nice job. They pay you well. They see to your benefits. But as soon as you think, well, so much money is passing through my hands, and I'm working for the bank, so why shouldn't some of it be mine? Then we're in trouble. Then karma. As long as I recognize it's the bank's money, then the bank will be very happy with me. Bank will maintain me. If I have any medical necessities, the bank may pay for everything. But if I try to appropriate the bank's property as my own, then trouble. All of these things, I'm not making these things up. This is all there in Bhagavad Gita. Read Bhagavad Gita as it is, you'll see all of these things. So many misconceptions are taught in the name of Hindu religion, in the name of Sanatana Dharma, in the name of Bhagavad Gita, which are contrary to what Krishna is saying. We should take Bhagavad Gita as it is. If I interpret it, then it's not what Krishna says, it's what I say. If Krishna says me, and I say, well, that means all of us, now that's my idea. Someone says, no, me means the self-realized person. Someone says, me means every living being. Someone says, me means something else. That means anyone's idea goes. Now it's not Bhagavad Gita anymore, it's my own interpretation. And then you've lost the value of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is valuable because it's spoken by the perfect person, Krishna. So it's valuable when we take it as it is, when we change it and say, I think it means this, I think it means that, my interpretation is this, my understanding is that, and we have something other than what's directly said, then it loses the value. You go to a doctor and the doctor says two of the white ones and one of the yellow ones. If you take two of the white ones and one of the yellow ones, you got the right idea. But if you think, well, two of the white ones and one of the yellow ones, that means three pills. So one day I'll take two white ones and one yellow one. One day I'll take three yellow ones. One day I'll take three white ones. Because the important thing is that they're all pills and that there's three. Now just take it as it is. Two white, one yellow, bus. But Krishna says me, that means me. Krishna says Kurukshetra, Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. So someone interprets that Kurukshetra means this body, and Panch Pandavas means the senses of this body. Why? Kurukshetra is a place, you can go there. There's a Kurukshetra railway station. You can, on the Uttar Rail, you can go. Why the interpretation? Interpretation is needed when something's unclear. Just like it said, there's a residential quarter on the Ganges. That's a problem because the Ganges is water. So how can there be a residential quarter on the water? So then interpretation is needed that no, on the Ganges means on the bank of the Ganges. Then everything is clear. But when something is already clear, then no interpretation is needed. We don't need to hold a candle up to the sun. So that's the importance of this edition, Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's quite different from what you may have seen elsewhere. And quite, and you'll get what you won't get elsewhere by reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. So it's good that you've got it. Please stick with it. We all have, yes.
Why is that? Is it that the dominant effect, the most influential effect is the material state. When we know that the supreme is the soul.
Soul is not supreme.
The soul is not supreme.
No. Otherwise, exactly as you say, if the soul were supreme, why would he be under Maya? Why would he be under the dominated by Maya? If I'm supreme, how could Maya be shoe-kicking me? Right? It's simple, right? If I'm being kicked by this material energy, how could I be the supreme? Supreme means I can kick everybody else, not that. Right? Kick supreme means no one can challenge me, that I have complete control. Supreme Ishar, Parameshwar. Parameshwar means supreme controller. How can Parameshwar be under the control of Maya?
So nurturing the soul, the spirit, is a struggle between the material effects.
Yeah, we're struggling. In the Bhagavad Gita, Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Manashastan Indriyani Prakritistani Karshati. The living beings are my angshas, they're my parts. Mamiva Amsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. He's eternal, Sanatana, but he's part of me. Angsh means tiny little part. And Manashastan Indriyani Prakritistani. He's situated in the material world. And Karshati, struggling with the mind, with the senses, because he's only Ansh. He's only a tiny particle. He's not the supreme whole. Krishna doesn't struggle with the material energy. Mayajyakshena Prakriti Sride. He orders the material energy. He's the Adyakshak, he's the overseer of the material energy. Given up the shelter of Krishna. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dretya. Krishna says, my material energy is insurmountable. No one can get free from it. Mam eva ye prapadyante maya me tam tamant. But if someone surrenders to me, at once freed from maya. How is that? Krishna is the controller of maya. He says, leave him alone. He's my man. You become a lawful citizen, then you're released from prison. But as long as we remain thieves, as long as we remain disobedient, then suffer.
The ranking of the soul to the material body, how do we rank it?
Ranking?
Yeah, ranking. The status of the soul to...
There's two kinds of souls, conditioned souls and liberated souls. As long as we are in this material world and forgetful of our relationship with Krishna, we're called conditioned souls. And when we remember our relationship with Krishna, surrender to Krishna, then we're liberated souls.
So, excuse me, is there any term like advanced souls?
Yeah, advanced souls means the more that we advance in Krishna consciousness.
Those are the advanced
souls. Yeah, you can be advanced. There are some who are less advanced, some more advanced. Someone doesn't even understand that he's not this body. He thinks the body is the self, so he's not at all advanced. Someone's more advanced. He understands, I'm not this body. But he doesn't understand more than that. He doesn't understand, if I'm a spiritual being, what is my duty as a spiritual? What do I do?
Still be an advanced soul?
Yeah, in this sense, Krishna says, Neha Vikramana Shosti Pratyavayo Navidite. Spiritual advancement is not lost. So suppose you make 60% advancement in this life, and you don't go beyond that, and you die. Then next life, you get to start again from 61%. That means course, as a child, you know, you're a child. What can the child do? But as the child grows up, automatically attracted to spiritual principles, to spiritual life. Because it was there, now it's automatically coming out. Parvadehika, from the previous lifetime. So then, again, he makes progress. Maybe 70%, 80%. Best thing is, in this one lifetime, finish the business, 100%. Don't come back.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
How would one know that you're finished with this material cycle?
How do you know that you're finished with the spirit, with the material cycle?
Yes.
You go back to Godhead and you don't come back.
How would I know that I'm sitting with you?
Just like when you're in the... How do you know when you're out of prison? No one will have to give you a certificate. You'll know.
Is the soul and the jivatma the same?
Yes, soul and jivatma are same. Jiva means living being. The jivatma. Yes, the same.
Can you tell us a little about when the soul departs from the body? During the period of...
That's described in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. By Lord Kapildev, the son of Devahuti, Krishna's incarnation. In the summary in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that upon leaving this body, he takes the next body. As the air picks up so many aromas, our mind picks up so many ideas, and those ideas take us to the next body. That's explained in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. No, mind continues to.
Mind goes with the soul.
Yes. The mind has a certain set of ideas for enjoyment, and it takes a body accordingly. I'm thinking of living like a pig, I take a pig's body. I'm thinking of living a different way, I take that way. According to my eligibility.
Leaves the body. We have a mourning period between 10 and 12 days, thinking that the soul is still on its journey. So we chant all the rituals, the mantras, clearing the way for the soul. How true is that?
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I don't understand that either. Because according to the Bhagavad Gita, or according to Srimad Bhagavatam, at once transfers there. Sometimes, in some unusual karmic circumstance, one is trapped and his next destination is delayed. But generally, immediately one goes.
But it is in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Excuse me?
It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the journey of the soul.
Yeah, you can. But that takes only a flash. If you read in third canto, those who perform sinful activities, who are sinful, go to the place of Yamaraj, and there's punishment there. And it's quite vividly described. But even though it feels to the soul to be like a very long time, it all takes place within moments. Very interesting description this Srimad Bhagavatam gives. Yeah, we have Bhagavatam here.
How many volumes are there?
There's how many volumes? There's 12 cantos, and we published it. Some of the cantos are one volume, some of them are two volumes. We've published it in different editions, you know, splitting it up in different ways, but it's not less than, say, 15 or 20 volumes, maybe more. 10th canto is very large. So many, many volumes. We'll keep you reading for your whole life. We have so much literature for you.
Because the one that I was reading, and I don't know, I just stopped reading it because I was so confused about during Krishna's time, when the men and women, when they...
The men?
when the people got into sexual acts, and it was, it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that it was done for years and years for enjoyment, and the body is there to be enjoyed. And
which, what were you reading?
Today, where we have to marry, and then we have a sexual act more for recreation. Huh. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's for enjoyment.
No, where are you reading? Sometimes you, it needs to be read in context. If you start from the first canto and read systematically, you know, otherwise it's something like coming in on a novel in the middle of the story, you get lost. If you start from first canto, from the very first volume, and read systematically, then you'll get the right idea. Sometimes there's just descriptions of, in the Bhagavatam, how someone is enjoying sex for thousands of years. That may be there, but we need to see the context. We need to understand it within the larger picture. The Bhagavatam is not recommending, oh, you just enjoy sex like anything. That's not Bhagavatam at all. So we need to read Bhagavatam systematically. If you start from the first canto, from the very first volume, and read along, then it's like a science. It is a science, not like a science. So read slowly, carefully, systematically, and you'll find so much enlightening understanding. Otherwise, if we read it in the association of devotees, then we'll understand. The devotee may be speaking from second canto, third canto, fourth canto. But when we discuss with the devotees, then that will help us get the right understanding. Sometimes reading on our own, we may have difficulty. It's recommended, actually, that the Bhagavatam should be read in the company of devotees. Then we have questions, we can ask the devotees, and so on. Is that okay? In Mauritius, what is that?
A learned person who's an authority on the Srimad Bhagavatam, but he needs
to be a devotee. Yes, we should hear Bhagavatam from a devotee. Sometimes also there are professional reciters, but that's a different thing. You know, someone who just speaks Bhagavatam for a week, and it's like a professional performance. But that's not recommended. Nitya Bhagavatam, the same thing. Once you hear Bhagavatam regularly, every day actually, in our ISKCON centers, we read every day Bhagavatam, not for a week or something like that. And we're hearing the explanations Srila Prabhupada is giving us in these purports. So you get so much understanding. Nityam Bhagavatam, the same. In our centers in Mauritius also, that's what we do. We have two centers there. Every day we're reading Bhagavad. You're from Mauritius?
No, my husband is from Mauritius.
Oh, okay, good. I was just there a few weeks back. Good place. Anything else? Yes.
I've just learned that thoughts don't die.
Excuse me?
Thoughts don't die.
Yes.
Why do we forget, especially when you get old?
Thoughts don't die. The mind doesn't die, but thoughts die all the time. Thoughts disappear.
They disappear.
Yeah. So many things I can't remember. Where did I put my car keys?
What's the difference between, is the mind the generator of thoughts?
The mind generates thoughts? Yeah, you can say the mind generates thoughts. So many things are generated by the mind. The mind comes, yeah, the mind cooks up all sorts of thoughts. A lot of it is just babble, you know. The mind is cooking up so much rubbish. The uncontrolled mind. Otherwise, the controlled mind is trained to think of Krishna. Then that mind becomes the best friend of the living being. Otherwise, sometimes our mind is the worst enemy. When it's uncontrolled, Krishna says, the mind is the worst enemy. When it's controlled, it's the best friend. We should elevate ourselves by the mind. Therefore, Krishna says, Manmana, think of me. Mana, the mind should be fixed on Krishna.
So the mind resides within the soul.
Within the?
The soul.
No. The mind is like a covering of the soul. Just as this gross body, physical body, is a covering of the soul, the mind is the subtle covering.
Now, why does it? You take it along even after death?
Yeah, the subtle. It's subtle, and we take it with us, or it takes us with it. With it, actually, the mind drags the soul to the next body because we've associated with the mind. I'm thinking, I'm this body, I'm this mind, so I'm remaining associated with the material mind. Otherwise, the liberated soul gets free from the material mind also, and it lives in purely spiritual existence. Is the soul saying I or the body saying I? Body is, has no consciousness. When the soul leaves the body doesn't say anything.
So the soul identifies with
body. Yeah, I identify with this body. I think I'm an American. I'm 20 or 60. I'm thin or fat. I'm not. The soul is not thin. The soul is not fat. The soul is not American. But I identify myself with these things. I'm spirit, but I identify with matter. I'm soul, but I identify myself as an American or as an Indian or as this or that. So the soul, that's called false ego. False ego means I'm thinking I'm something I'm not. And that's the basic principle of material existence.
Hare Krishna.
Yoga Maya.
Yes.
You want me to explain what Yoga Maya is? That's Yoga Maya means Krishna's personal energy. The word is used in different ways, but it's Krishna's spiritual energy of Krishna. Sometimes the Yoga Maya acts in such a way that the devotee sees Krishna, but forgets that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just like Yashoda Mai. She's not worshipping Krishna, that you're Bhagavan, you're God. She forgets. She's thinking, Krishna is my child. So how is that possible? It's possible because Krishna makes it possible through his energy, Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya is the energy of Krishna that does that. Yes? Oh, okay. Talking to him. Something else?
So everything that we do is controlled by Krishna.
Everything we do is controlled by Krishna, yes.
The condition is, if I murder someone, I'm controlled by Krishna.
Yes, but it's your choice also. We're controlled by Krishna through his material energy. That's our choice. When we surrender to Krishna, just like Arjuna, he says, I will not fight. So he's controlled by Krishna, but he's refusing. He has a little free choice. Krishna is saying fight. He's saying, no, I'm not going to fight. Because he's controlled by Krishna's energy of illusion. That means he's indirectly controlled by Krishna. Just like the citizen in jail is indirectly controlled by the government through the prison department. So Arjuna is controlled by the illusory energy. I won't fight. And at the end of Bhagavad Gita, no, now I'm free from illusion. I'll do directly what you say. I'll fight. So we're controlled by Krishna, but this much free will we have. Either we'll be controlled by Krishna's spiritual energy or the material energy. Now I'm controlled by the material energy, so I'm murdering, I'm stealing, or I'm doing good job, good work, whatever it is, according to the material dictations of the material energy. But when I surrender to Krishna, then I take Krishna's direct dictation. That's up to me which way I want to go. Just like my hand faces this way, it's in the light. It faces this way, it's in the darkness.
You have a choice.
You have a choice.
justified to fight, I mean to kill, or to murder.
Not a question of faith, it's a question of duty. Just like a judge, he orders that someone be killed. That's his duty. If he doesn't give that order, he's neglecting his duty. If he says, well, you're my brother-in-law, or you've given me, you know, 10 lakhs, so I'm not going to kill you, then he's neglecting his duty. He looks at the law, he says, you've done such and such thing, I sentence you to be hanged by the neck till dead. That's his duty.
How spiritual or faith wise?
Excuse me?
I mean, if you say, if you equate that action to a spiritual duty, how justified are you?
If you say that again?
If you equate the action of killing.
You can't, it's not whimsical. It's not that you just say, I feel this is very spiritual to kill these people. You have to know what the law is, just like the judge. He can't just say, well, I don't like the looks of this guy. He has to know what is the principles of the law. And then he has to know, it's my duty to have him hanged, or it's my duty to let him go, or it's my duty to imprison him, whatever it is. You can't whimsically just think, well, he has to know.
So the jihad is...
Jihad is not wrong.
It's not wrong.
No. Jihad means holy war. Holy war is not in principle wrong. It has to actually be holy. Arjuna is fighting for the right cause. And he's fighting directly under the direction of Krishna. It's not that war is bad. War is sometimes good. Someone attacks your wife, if you stand there and say, I'm going to be nonviolent, that's not your duty. Someone breaks into your home, someone attacks your wife, someone sets fire, and it's your duty. You have to retaliate. You have to defend. So there's justification for war, there's justification for criminal punishment of criminals. There's justification for all these things. But it's not just I take a slogan, well, I'm doing it for God, I'm doing it for the country, I'm doing it for... It's not just a sentimental thing where you just throw a slogan out there. You have to actually know.
Within Christianity, there were such wars in the past. I've just forgotten the terminology.
Crusades.
The Crusades, yes. But the motives thereof were more to gain
territory and political ascendancy. Yeah, therefore you have to. You can't just, you know, stand up in holy robes and say we're doing this for God. You have to, just like a judge, you can't, or, you know, an ordinary citizen, you can't just put on a judge's robe and say, you know, to the gallows. Or even the judge. It's not just that because he's wearing black robes, he can just send anyone to the gallows and that makes it justice. You have to know what the law is. And then it doesn't matter. If you go against the law, you may be a judge. Still you're culpable. Not just that I, you know, I wear a certain uniform and now I can do anything. One has to know what is actually duty and what is not. These things are explained in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. One should actually know. Present leaders of society don't actually know. They just do things for their own self-aggrandizement and announce this is justice, this is for peace, this is for whatever.
And they create those laws, that kind of justice, which is, in the true sense, not justice.
Yeah, and it's not, you know...
There are people who've got to conform to that. Because it is law.
Yeah, and everybody's doing that. You know, maybe we say jihad and the Muslims and, the, you know, America has its own jihad. you know, we're fighting for peace and justice in the world, you know, and really they're like robbing everyone blind.
Yeah.
So it's not just that, because I throw around words like peace or God or justice or anti-terrorism or security or whatever. That means it's fine. You actually have to know what the law is and actually have to be following. Otherwise, there's so much hypocrisy. People are doing anything and everything, and then they find a way to justify it. That's different. Okay, shall we stop here? A little more kirtan?
Maharaj, sorry.
Another question?
Yes, Maharaj, the last one. Can Maharaj just explain shortly the importance of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra in helping one to grow spiritually?
Importance of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Chanting Hare Krishna means you come directly in association with Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Abhinnatam Namanamino. There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name. So when we chant the holy name of Krishna, we're once in touch with Krishna. And so our mind becomes purified, heart becomes purified by regular chanting. That all right? Such a nice thing. There's a question. Hare Krishna.
Is chanting the holy name of Krishna illuminate yourself?
Is chanting the holy name of Krishna what?
Does it illuminate yourself from karma?
Does it free you from karma?
Yes.
Yes. It's said that by chanting the holy name of Krishna even once, purely, one is freed from the results of more karma than he can accumulate. That's stated in Shastra. So, should we have some kirtan?
Yes. After we go to the next part, the next part is eating, prasad, sanctified foods, and then remember tomorrow we've got another program like this, 11:30 a.m., where you can come also with prepared questions. We've got the same opportunity to ask Maharaj. But tomorrow we've got a double header, we've got a program in 11:00 in the morning, and another program 5:00 in the afternoon like this. Just a relaxed program like this. You can come with questions and you can ask Maharaj. Plenty of opportunities. We've got books in the temple. All the opportunities are there. Thank you very much. We'll sing a little bit after singing. Without going to the, those who are getting cold, get somewhere into the house. It's quite a big house for us to enjoy our meal. Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. You go ahead. You want to lead?